20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thank you so much, as always, for being here. Thank you for making Pack-A-Day so much of your home during all of your draft content. It has been unbelievably amazing. I finally got to the Luigi's Pizza on Sunday, had the opportunity to celebrate that. The what I will call the quote-unquote Matthew Golden crust was absolutely perfect. And so that was a much enjoyed aspect of my Sunday. Huge shout out to Luigi's for sponsoring the show all weekend long, all draft long. I am joined, of course, by the one and only Justice Mosqueda. You can find him on social media at JUMOSQ. You can find him on acmepackingcompany.com. Absolutely crushing all of the draft content, post-draft content, scouting reports, everything that you need. Justice, it is wonderful to be back chatting with you. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Yeah, you reminded me. You were like, are we still on? And I was like, I forgot what time is. Time doesn't exist right now. I'm just just staring at a screen. 24/7. It's 6:16 right now Pacific. Haven't eaten yet today, so I need me one of those Luigi pizzas.
Yes, I'll try to ship you one as best as I can. Sunday was my official. I hit a wall day, so I had. I woke up, got some stuff done. My son had a soccer game in Milwaukee, so I had a 2-hour trip there and back. Got home and just bam, that was it. I'm like, I'm out. I'm done. Had to take a nap and just kind of reload and refresh with everything, but. It has been a whirlwind. In a way, I still can't believe the draft is over. And another way, I very much can. It's just been an absolute whirlwind. The dust is finally settled. We know who these new Green Bay Packers are. There's still some questions out in the ether that we'll, I'm sure, discuss throughout the course of today's show. But just as the dust has settled, how are you feeling about everything?
Pretty good. To be totally frank, I haven't gotten to the last three guys in this class, but I have seen... I've gotten to the two edge rushers. Based off of the draft, I mean, I'm pretty happy. Obviously, we could talk about it whenever, but the Tom Silverstein report about Jair,
we can jump into it right away.
Little shakier about what the hell is going to go on in a quarterback. But outside of that, I think we're in a pretty good spot roster wise.
So, if you're unfamiliar, the Tom Silverstein put out an article on Sunday. Basically saying what I've been saying is that there is no change in the Jair situation whatsoever, that Green Bay has no intentions of bringing him back, that they are working towards finding a resolution, and that they are proceeding as if basically Jair Alexander will not be on the team in 2025. That was my interpretation. Is that how you interpreted it as well?
Yeah, for sure. The thing that now doesn't make sense to me, now that we have this one more layer of clarity, right, yep, is essentially what this boils down to is Jair's camp telling the Packers, hey, we're not going to take a pay cut, right? And the Packers are like, okay, well, we're not going to offer one then. They're like, okay, so then are you going to pay me $17.5 million a year? And the Packers are like, no, we're not going to do that. Okay, then are you going to release me? No, we're not going to do that. So they're just hoping and praying someone trades for Jair. But Jair's not going to rework that contract. So exactly. No one's going to trade for Jair.
Exactly.
So I don't know what we're doing. It'll be interesting to see, right? There's deadlines. It's one tomorrow? Today? When this comes out?
Monday?
Packers are going to... are going to start doing in-person work. They would have started it last week, but because they held draft, it got pushed back, was just virtual last week. They can't afford Jair to get hurt in practice. They don't want to pay him that $17.5 million. So we'll see. We'll see what happens, if he shows up or not. If I were Jair, I'm showing up because get the $700,000 for the workout bonus. The Packers can't tell you to stay home, right? Because if you have those incentives, they can't tell you to stay home. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. I mean, they could take this up until, honestly, like trade deadline, I guess, if you really want to stretch it out. But anytime he goes on the field, that's an injury risk. And if you don't want to pay him that money, why are you even going down this path? I just don't understand their logic, Andy. And this is why, you know, you can float out the pre-draft, or not even pre-draft, like pre-cut down day trade stuff and get that out of the way so much earlier. And if no one's willing to bite, you can just kind of cut bait. And it hasn't hurt the Packers yet. But the first risk that they're actually about to take is him hitting the practice field.
Right.
Right. So if you don't think, if you think he's so injury prone that he's not worth the $17.5 million, because it's not about his, you know, caliber of talent, right? Then why do you want to risk him injuring himself and paying him $17.5 million for not even playing for you this season if you don't want to carry him on that number? It seems like the brunt of the risk is being put on the Packers, not Jair at this point. So
a couple things. Number one, I can't think of any reason, but you're smarter than me. Can you think of any reason why they would want to June 1st release him rather than release him now? I don't think so. I don't think there's a reason to. I think that they have the money anyway now. They don't really need it late. Like, it's all going to just be carryover anyway.
I don't think it matters because of the carryover.
Yep.
I guess you could June 1 him if you really plan to. Like, it just gives you some flexibility to, like, make a trade at the deadline. But again, I don't think it matters. So I think you could post June 1 him.
Yeah, suppose you could, you could post June 1st him anyway. So, okay, there's no difference there. So you're right on that. Number two is my gut feel, and this is just totally, again, just kind of based on what you're saying, but just kind of like, I wonder if this comes to a head this week as they do sort of like, if I think maybe Green Bay was trying to do everything they could to wait for a team that maybe didn't address corner in the draft or look like they, you know, were going to need a corner after. And now they have one more canvassing of the league where they go through it, 31 teams and be like, you want this guy, you want this guy, you want this. Can we work something out? And if there's something close, they, or even if maybe some team has been offering a conditional seventh and Green Bay's like, no, we need to do better than that. And now the conditional seventh all of a sudden sounds good enough or whatever. If not, I wonder if this just comes to a head this week and they say, all right, enough's enough. We're not going to have them do the workouts. We're not going to risk an injury. We're not going to have any sort of distraction. We're just going to move on this week.
Yeah. And again, I think the Jalen Ramsey stuff that popped in late where, you know, he's on the trade block and all that stuff too, hurts them from a market standpoint, just the cornerback market. So, okay, let's say there's one team that needs a cornerback right now. I haven't done the deep dive into who's really screwed at that position at this point, right?
Right.
Been doing other things. But if their option is like, oh, yeah, we can get, you know, Jalen Ramsey, then do you even have much of a market, right? You need several of these teams and for them to have a bidding war, right? You almost need three of these teams in the market, right? One to take Jalen Ramsey and two more to bid against each other. And I just don't know if there's three teams right now who are just like, we're so desperate at the cornerback position that we'll take on Jair Alexander's $17.5 million contract.
The only other thing that I would wonder is if they're trying to play hardball with Jair to have him do the contract restructure with the team that's actually offering a trade. Cause the one of the other parts of the article was Tom Silverstein said that they had agreed to a trade with another team. Another team had made an offer. Apparently that was somewhat, you know, acceptable to Green Bay, and it was Jair's, you know, inability or, non-desire to actually restructure the contract, that shut down the deal. So I don't know if they're trying to play hardball and be like, hey, there's a team that's willing to restructure with you right now. We can make this thing all go away. You can get out of Green Bay. We get what we want. Just figure out a restructure with them. I don't know if that's what they're trying to get out of this too, but it seems like a very awkward situation. Cause like, what are we talking about, Justice, of like in an absolute insane best case scenario, a sixth, like, you know,
a fifth.
Yeah. At a crazy best. Yeah. Would be my guess. So, I don't know that that's like, you know, again, and that's a crazy best case scenario. I would guess it's more of like a conditional something, but who knows? It just feels like if this is going to be something that is an injury risk / headache, just bite the bullet.
I'm with you. And I think I would have tried real hard to convince Jair to take a pay cut. And it seems like that's not a road that the Packers ever were really willing to go down. That would have been my priority number one. Keep Jair. Don't keep the $15 million per year salary. But yeah, I think the hay's in the barn at this point. If we don't get a move this week and Jair shows up and he's doing stuff on the field, again, the Packers are taking all the risk now. And at what point are you like, you know, you're trying to squeeze blood out of a rock, right? Like, dog, it's a fifth round pick, man.
Yeah, it's not that necessary. A couple other things. Just because I've posted for a while now and I've talked about for a while how I don't think there's any way in which Jair is back. And then we get the article today from Tom Silverstein. Anytime I talk about it, it seems that there is some portion of the fan base that is very upset by this, or that doesn't believe it, that doesn't want it to exist, that believes that there's some sort of just each side of the coin is maybe calling each other's bluff, but eventually they're going to work something out together. Let me start there. Is there any world at this point, you know, we just got the report from Tom Silverstein today, where you see that this could still reconcile and could somehow lend itself to Jair returning to Green Bay and playing this season?
I guess, but it's not looking good.
No.
Right? Just seems like Jair doesn't want to take a pay cut. I mean, I think that's what it boils down to. And then if he's not going to make the 17 and a half, he wants to be able to choose wherever the heck he wants to go. Right? So, I mean, maybe. I mean, this doesn't make sense because this is not how things work. But, like, maybe there's a world where Jair gets released and then the Packers happen to be the highest bidder on a potential re-sign. But
yeah, now we're in the realm of like really rare situations and scenarios.
Yeah, that's not usually how things work, because like even we've talked about this with like practice squad guys, right? And if you're in front of a coach for like 2 years, they know your talent ability, right? So whatever you're getting from them, you know, love, money, all that stuff wise, right? After about 2 years, and if it doesn't satisfy you, you try to get in front of a new set of eyes, right? So what, like if Jair signs on a 1 year contract back in Green Bay, what is the potential that they are then from that point forward going to give him another big extension, right? Versus if he did it with another team. And I think those are probably the conversations that they end up having. So I don't know, man. Like,
yeah, I can't figure out one. Yeah. The other thing that I wonder a little bit here is I wonder if Green Bay cares less about the trade comp and more about having some level of control of where he goes. Like, I wonder if there's legitimate, like, and again, if you've made the decision that you're going to move on and he's not a value add to your team, then maybe you have less care if he goes to Minnesota, Detroit, Chicago, or whatever. Like, you've made that decision already. But I wonder if they want some say of like, we know if we release him, there's a decent chance he ends up in the division, or even like in the scenario that you're mentioning, like he probably, if he's upset with Green Bay, you know, he'd take $1 million less to go play for somebody that's playing against Green Bay because he feels slighted or whatever. I wonder if there's any piece of that where it's not just the trade compensation, but they want some level of control so he doesn't end up in the division or a team in the NFC like Philly, or that they could see down the road in the playoffs.
I guess, but when we talk about trades and stuff, right, how often do we have to remind ourselves, like, it's not about the player, it's about the contract, right? And once you let him go, you have no control. You got no control of that. So whatever team sign him to is whatever team sign him to. If you wanted him to have a bidding war, buddy, the time for a bidding war and the NFC North getting priced out was not April 28th.
No, it was well before.
Right. It was when everyone had cap space and the New England Patriots, you know, had like $100 million in cap and all that stuff. So, yeah, I just, again, a lot of this stuff hasn't made sense. And
I wish I
knew more.
Let's touch base on the last part of that, the part of it not making sense. Cause I think you alluded to it earlier. And the thing that most fans, I think, are maybe perplexed, frustrated, disappointed by is the fact that They've done nothing at corner. I mean, obviously Nate Hobbs is a very large something. I think you could make the point of just saying in general of like, hey, Ballantyne, Stokes, Rochelle are gone and Hobbs is some level of replacement for that side of things. But now Jair is gone and you don't have a Jair replacement. Not that he played a ton anyway, but there just hasn't been maybe enough done at corner from what people would have liked to have seen done. And you end up with Nate Hobbs in a seventh round pick as your only real additions to that cornerback room this offseason. So, you know, how do you get to this point if you're Green Bay, knowing that you're moving on from Jair, but really the only additions are a seventh round pick and Nate Hobbs?
Well, I think the way that they probably view it is a three-man competition for two spots, right? Outside corner and slot. And your options are, because Keyshawn's starting outside, right?
Yep.
Keyshawn's starting outside. Who are you going to start outside? Opposite of him, it'll probably come down to Hobbs and Carrington Ballantyne, right? So there's at least competition there, right? You know, you assume cream rises to the top, all that stuff. And then in the slot, it could be Hobbs or Bullard, right? So there is a world, you know, where we've talked about how the NFL is considering the Hobbs contract to be a slot, but the Packers are hoping that he becomes more than that. Personally, I think Hobbs is going to end up in the slot, right? But there is a world where Hobbs does well enough outside that he ends up beating Carrington Ballantyne and Javon Bullard takes that next step. And they're like, okay, those are our three, right? My biggest worry is the depth still. It's not even necessarily starting corner and outside corner number two. It's just still the depth. They can get through with one injury, right? Like if they're playing, if Carrington wins the outside job and Hobbs is still in the slot, right? Carrington goes down. Hobbs can kick outside and they can bring Bullard off of the bench.
Yep.
But one more guy goes down on the outside. Like if it's Keyshawn and Ballantyne, if it's Keyshawn and Hobbs, right? Any of those combination of those three guys, if we get two injuries there, that's when we're talking about like a practice squad guy coming up and having to start for you or, you know, the kid out of Tulane, I haven't seen him yet. So I have no opinion on the guy. I know he's straight line speed you look at his RAS card, he's all straight line, no wiggle.
Yep.
But that's testing. I haven't seen the film.
It's similar.
I don't think you want to start a rookie seventh round pick if there's two injuries at the position. So I think they could be in the market. I don't know if they'll be in the starter market though. I think they'll
that's
be
the
in
thing.
Yeah, I think they'll, if they add a guy at corner, I think it's like steady Eddie depth addition. We're taking a swing on a guy who gets released at cut down deadline or trying to poach a Russell Douglas, taking a swing on one of those guys, right? Rather than like, let's go get Jalen Ramsey. I don't think that's right on the table.
The weird part is like I was looking through and it's really hard to find a player that makes any sort of sense as like a corner that could potentially step up and play if you wanted him to, but also that like has special teams value. Like you could find potentially somebody like a Kendall Fuller who has played obviously a decent amount for Miami, who like if he's like your, you know, number three, number four corner, you're probably fine with it, but I don't know how much special teams value he's going to give you. And he's older. And like, I don't see that really being the direction. Asante Samuel Jr. is out there. We've got injury problems, neck issues.
He's not a team's guy. He's small.
No, for sure. Yeah, not a team's guy. And, you know, not a great tackler either. So he doesn't really make sense. Then you get into like a tier of players of like, well, all right, who's a potential like reclamation project that could play a little bit? Like the only thing like I could even get close to is Caleb Farley, the former first-round pick by, I believe, is the Tennessee Titans, who has played 333 total snaps since 2021. And there's just not real, you know, like there's not a ton of upside or value there. So I'm just seeing if he actually even played any teams. He played 55 snaps on special teams this past year, actually had a good PFF special teams grade, 75.8, 74 snaps in 2022 with Tennessee. But again, he's been a terrible corner. He's 6'2", 197. But again, now we're really scraping at things here, Justice.
I'm with you. Depth at corner is something I'm not comfortable with on this team. I think that's probably it's depth at corner, depth at D tackle, and depth at linebacker. I'm worried about injuries on the defensive side this year, for sure.
Yeah, we're in lockstep completely. And the offseason's not over. It doesn't have to be a free agent signing. They can explore trades now that teams have added a bunch of players to their roster, and some team might have a surplus of a nose tackle, especially after 1,000 defensive tackles got drafted this weekend. Some team could have a surplus of corner. Some team could have a surplus of linebacker. Well, speaking of linebacker, I don't know. Did you see Isaiah Simmons emoji that he posted?
Yeah. What? I can't tell which one, like, is that good for the Packers? Bad for the Packers? I don't know.
That's what I was wondering too. I think
there's a cheese underneath like one of those propped up traps.
Like traps. Right? Yeah. So it's like a cheese trap. So like you would think like if he's going to get the cheese, that would be a bad thing because there's a trap. Or is he setting up the cheese, which would be bad for the Packers?
I don't know. I saw that and I was like, I'm not going to spend 20 minutes of mental energy trying to figure out if this is a pro or anti-Packers situation.
I'm going to say it's pro. I'm going to guess that he signs with Green Bay this week is my guess here.
I will say, okay, linebacker. Super interesting from just a raw numbers perspective from the Packers 91-man roster. Good said that they had struggles only keeping five guys. And now they might look at the what's his name? Colin Oliver as a potential linebacker.
Yep.
He didn't do as much of that in college as people think. Like people think of him as like hybrid linebacker, edge rusher. He was like 50-50 2 years ago at linebacker. Other than that, all of his snaps have been as a designated pass rusher, defensive end, right? So I'm not sure I'm there with them on that. Like maybe he could be the Isaiah McDuffie backup in three linebacker sets or something like that. But he's not like he's never going to play nickel sets.
No.
He's never going to play nickel sets for them. That is not who this guy is.
Although did you see my Raz card?
Of him at corner? Yeah, saw that. He's athletic.
Baby. I'm looking at any options for I obviously said it very jokingly. But he's a 9.5 Raz at corner. So there's your Preston Smith replacement, Justice.
I need him lining up I need a photo of him next to the 225-pound cornerback that we got out of FAU or whatever, because they got to be similar on the field.
I forgot about that. There was somebody who posted, I haven't looked into this at all, but there is somebody that posted that he has actually added more weight and that there was some talk of him changing to something like a linebacker, that not like a corner. So maybe he's another off ball, and not that again, you're expecting.
He played true cornerback at FAU. That is crazy, dude.
Yeah.
He didn't play in the slot. He didn't play safety. That's really interesting. So, right. We have a couple of these guys who it's like, you know, maybe possibly they could play linebacker, but at this point they're not listing him as those things. Right.
Yep.
The Packers talked about the struggles that they had last season, only carrying five in a 3-4 defense, right? They only got six on their roster right now. And they did sign a pretty, I would assume, high-priced UDFA in Jamin Dumas Johnson. He was, you know, rated as like a draftable guy for a lot of people. He, by the way, like Nazir Stackhouse and like, what's his name, Brinson, they were all Georgia guys. Dumas Johnson was a Georgia guy, transferred to Kentucky. He's there with the Brenton Cox Jr. as far as the, like, yeah, he was at Georgia for 3 years, and we just don't count him as a Georgia guy. We're taking a lot of Georgia guys.
Yeah.
So they're thin. They're super thin at linebacker right now, just from, like, a 91-man roster perspective. An interesting name that they're bringing in. Have you seen this Connor Shea stuff?
I have not.
So Wyoming linebacker. One-year starter, seemed to do pretty well at Wyoming. He was 229, 6'1 and a half, ran a 4.58 40 time, 9.2 RAS. His father is a Canadian national, so he can get a Canadian passport. Because of CFL. That, he is projected to be the number one pick in the CFL.
Because it's super important.
On Tuesday, yes, because the CFL has rules where not only is there a limit on how many non-Canadians you can have on your roster, there's a rule on how many non-Canadians you can physically have on the field at all times.
Yeah.
So like, if you have a Canadian quarterback and everyone else has American quarterbacks, having that Canadian quarterback means you can have another American offensive lineman or American receiver or American running back. So yeah, the Canadian math gets real interesting in that league. So he's a very high sought after player. He's going to be in Packers rookie minicamp. Interesting, right? Yeah. That's potentially a guy who has an option to come up. He's not the only Canadian that the Packers have. We talked about
Algersma,
the quarterback. The Packers are already, if you look at the reports, the Packers are actually at 91 players. I don't know if one of these guys who reportedly signed with Green Bay hasn't actually signed with Green Bay and he's actually, you know, another tryout guy. But if they're at 92, hint, 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 that could be a potential Jair move, right?
Yeah.
92 minus one Jair gets you to a flat roster. And then any other guy that they add from rookie minicamp would have to have, you know, a corresponding transaction and stuff.
I would think that, especially with what happened over the weekend, guys like Cornelius Johnson, Julian Hicks are a little bit nervous at the moment at wide receiver.
The reserve futures guys, the guys who are on practice squads or guys who are brought in to replace practice squad guys at the end of the year.
Jeremiah Martin and Deslin Alexander, defensive ends, who now you've got, you know, Colin Oliver and Baron Sorrell at those spots. You know, some of the three techniques.
There's 17 offensive linemen. I don't know if we've ever had 17 offensive linemen, man.
Yeah, so probably like Marquise Hayes, not looking great for him. That's probably one. Like, they're going to release some of these guys that, you know, are probably going to be, you know, some casualties to get these UDFA guys in. And then, like you said, that usually they sign about three guys from rookie minicamp, the tryouts that they like. So there's going to be a few of those as well. And there's definitely going to be some roster gymnastics going on over the course of the next week or so.
Yeah.
And maybe, maybe number 23 as well. We'll see if that actually happens. But I do think that there's a decent chance, especially with the linebacker math being the way that it is, and with Isaiah Simmons tweeting cheese emojis to some extent, and there obviously being a visit in Green Bay prior, I do wonder with Green Bay not taking a linebacker, or a true off-ball linebacker in the draft, if Isaiah Simmons is potentially in play there for Green Bay, which would make some level of sense. All right, should we talk draft?
Yeah, let's do it. We're only 27 minutes in.
Mm-hmm. Would you expect anything less from us? We'll just kind of go. This is kind of like the dust of settle. We don't have to obviously go through the last few guys in as great a detail, since I know you haven't got to the tape yet. But, you know, just kind of overarching how we're feeling. You know, we could go through like what was on the clock or like what other options that they had. But just kind of going through these high level one by one, you know, what they're going to be able to bring to the team and what you're either excited, disappointed, surprised by, et cetera. So however direction you want to go in is cool. We'll start with wide receiver Matthew Golden, obviously taken in the first round. Obviously, we've in general talked a lot about him already, but how are you feeling about it now that the dust has settled a little bit?
Yeah, good. Felt good about it at the time. Had seen him, obviously. He came on visit and stuff. So we got I did enough work where, you know, we had the scouting report and stuff up. We had talked about him in the past, him and Isaiah Bond. I think we talked about Golden actually before he even came on a visit. We just talked about the Texas receivers together.
Yep.
No one that I really wanted more than Golden at that point. As far as how the draft shook out, I thought they would have had more options at D tackle in that spot. I thought potentially Shamar could have dropped. I think Shamar could have been in play for a trade up at 18 if he had fallen one more spot. But I would have thought, you know, based off of where people had him going, like Derek Harmon, Kenneth Grant, I thought there was a chance that those guys, or a good chance that at least one of them would be on the board at 23. I think I said this on one of your streams before, but like, we all liked the defensive tackle class. Everyone recognized that it was like the strength of the NFL of this draft. The NFL liked it even more. These guys flew off the board. Tyreek Williams going in the first. The Texas kid that I brought up, and it was like, I was told this is a sleeper guy for the Packers, you know, in the first round, depending on how things shake out. The Texas kid went like 41st, and he was graded like 71st or something. These guys flew. Everyone wanted a piece of these rookie defensive tackles. So I'm not surprised that the Packers didn't have a lot of, like, you know, quote unquote value pick options available on the interior, especially at nose tackle. I think when Goot came out and said, yeah, we're going to try to work something out long-term with Devontae Wyatt, I think that changes the calculus a little bit, where it's like, okay, we're not in the three tech market. We're only looking at nose tackles.
Hey guys.
So it kind of limits your options even more, which I think is really interesting, because they brought in Walter Nolan on a visit. They brought in TJ Sanders on a visit. Nolan, by the way, who was considered late first round, if first round, and he ended up going to the Cardinals. TJ Sanders, who was considered, you know, borderline second, third round pick. End of
second, yeah.
He ends up going way higher than people expected, right? So, yeah, these defensive tackles flew. I don't know why they brought in the three techs on visits if they were going to extend Devontae Wyatt. I'm not surprised that they didn't have a value pick on D tackle. And that kind of, like, that just kind of paints the picture for the rest of the draft. But at the golden pick, I would have assumed a defensive tackle was going to be available. Clearly, the NFL had different ideas. And Golden was a guy that, personally, going into the draft, just slaughtered him at 12. I was like, Matthew Golden is going to be a Dallas Cowboy. Because by that point, I had heard, like, the Territorial McMillan stuff. Like, there's a couple teams that were worried about it. But it's not, it wasn't like the NFL is down on Tet. So I just assumed that he was going to go before the Cowboys pick.
So you look at what was taken next. I don't think there's any interest probably in taking Donovan Jackson out of Ohio State at that spot. They certainly weren't going to take Jackson Dart. I don't think, we talked about James Pierce Jr. not really being their type at edge rusher. They weren't taking Malachi Starks at safety. Tyleek Williams seemed aggressive at 28, would have seemed that much more aggressive at pick 23. Although, again, with the way the defensive tackles went, you never know. Josh Connerly Jr., maybe. They'll never really completely rule out an offensive lineman, of course, which we found out in the second round, which we'll talk about in a second. We talked about Maxwell Harrison as a possibility. Jahad Campbell, I don't think they were in that market. Josh Simmons, again, maybe would have been. But, like, that was the rest of the first round. Not a ton of things that make a lot of sense. Schwesinger went number one. Then you get Jaden Higgins, which, again, just get Golden is better. Iman Worry, we talked about Iman Worry of, like, maybe they were interested. It just didn't make any sense. Judkins at running back. And then just, again, Trey Henderson at running back. Like, none of these next sort of picks make a ton of sense unless they were, again, in love with Harrison, which we talked about, but he had the off-field thing, or if they wanted to go offensive tackle in the first. And again, when you get Golden to fall to you at 23, you know, you look at it in hindsight, and you're just like, this is the most obvious decision in the world. And it was, and they did, and they took him. And it was, I think, a really smart move.
Yeah. That pick to me was just like, yeah, this is what you do when you're, when you're given this scenario, yep. You turn in the pick for Matthew Golden. So I don't really feel really one way or the other than I'm happy we didn't take Harrison or Iman Worry, because I didn't really like him in Green Bay. So
I could
avoiding those strong, two, that's what I cared about.
I could make a strong argument that, like, if you were just kind of placing, like, first round grades type things, I could make an argument that 23 was like the Mendoza line of, like, Golden was like the last, like, kind of like tier one ish mm-hmm. or like first round guy to go.
Well, because, depending on what you think of Simmons, right?
Yes. Goes 32nd. Yep.
Right. So outside of him. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm with you.
Good for Green Bay to be on that side of the Mendoza line, I guess, other than the fact that it cost them, like, losing playoff game, but we'll talk about that another time, I guess. All right. Second round. Of course, this is the much talked about. We've had the opportunity to talk about him a little bit, but Anthony Belton, 54th overall offensive tackle, NC State. I tweeted a little bit about him today, but I'll let you kind of go first in your thoughts now that we've had the chance to think about this a little bit more.
Yeah, he's another guy I had the chance to watch pre-draft because he was a visit guy. Super busy, right? He had all those visits. He had, I can't remember if it was 16 or 18, but he had a bunch of these visits lined up. Seemed like he became very popular once coaches got in the mix. That's generally how, you know, if a guy doesn't have injury questions or if a guy doesn't have off-field stuff and he's visiting a lot of places, usually it's because the coaches in the league like him a whole lot more than the scouts in the league do. And there's a big market for him. He was projected as, like, a third-round guy. Again, a lot of people who watch a lot more prospects and talk to a lot more coaches, scouts, executives, when they release their, like, you know, three round mock draft, two round mock draft the week before the draft, he was going in the second round. So I know a lot of people are like, reach, 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 consensus board. That's great. Generally, I do agree that the consensus board is a good way to judge market rather than, you know, in an individual big board or something like that. Yep. I just think the consensus boards were off on that. Maybe that measured closer to what scouts believed in the NFL. But once the coaches got involved, it was pretty clear a lot of people like this guy. And a lot of people like him because he's a people mover. And I think it's almost like an identity selection, right? Where the Packers are like, we want to get big. We want to get big on the interior. We want to move people. We do not want to be pushed around by Detroit. We don't want to be pushed around by the Philadelphia Eagles. We have to get bigger if we want to compete against these teams. And I think they got tired of being put in pass first situations because they couldn't run the ball. I mean, how many times do we look at, you know, Bill Barnwell had those stats, right? That went super viral where he was like, you know, everyone gives credit for, you know, the three top free agents in this past free agent class at running back. But Saquon Barkley is here in terms of efficiency. And, you know, Derrick Henry was still up there. But Josh Jacobs is, you know, below average in terms of if you look at EPA and stuff. And anyone watching these Packers games will say, well, that's dumb because he's clearly creating a lot of opportunities for himself. It's just the differences are on the offensive line, right? And I think this is, you know, a step toward getting closer to the Baltimore Ravens offensive line, getting closer to the Philadelphia Eagles offensive line. I do think Belton is going to end up at guard ultimately. I know he's 6'6". I think he's going to end up at guard. I don't think he has the footwork to hang out at tackle. A lot of that was stressed in a negative way because of the way NC State's offense works off of play action. And they pull guards. They do all these funky things where you're selling run hard for 2 seconds. And then you're put in a disadvantageous situation to block a pass rusher. But I think just like it also gave us a lot of reps of his feet in space. And I don't like what I saw. So I think he's going to end up at guard. I think ultimately the plan for the team left to right is going to be Morgan, Banks, Jenkins, Belton, and then Tom. Yeah, and they'll pay Tom. They won't pay Ryan. They won't pay Rashid Walker. And so when asked, like, how do you describe, like, the first 2 days of the Packers draft? And I said, you know, they're future-proofing their offense, right? And I think that's just – kind of what I stand by. And some of that, I don't think they came into the draft thinking we got to get out of all these contracts, right? But when the board falls to you, however it did, I think they were just like, yeah, we're cool, but we're cool with doing that. We're cool with making that decision. We're okay with not paying Rashid Walker $20+ million per year to be our left tackle moving forward.
Yeah. And you look at, you know, you said he's, well, he's 6'6", with 330, 340, whatever he ends up being. Yeah. The Super Bowl champs just had a 6'7".
They said that he slimmed down for the combine.
Yeah.
They said he slimmed down for the combine. So he's bigger than that on film.
Yeah. So 6'7", 370 player at right guard for the Eagles last year in Mekhi Becton. It's only one letter off, Becton to Belton. It's just a C to an L. You know, you're putting him at right guard.
And they both played for Louisville, right? They were both left tackles at Louisville.
There you go. There you go. So, yeah, we'll see. I like it the more and more that I've watched him. And I liked him even going in because I loved his demeanor. I loved his physicality. I loved his nasty. I loved all of it. And I've said for so long, like, Green Bay just needs a little bit more of that. You know, whether you want to call it a TJ Lang mentality up front or whatever the heck you want to call it, you have to have a couple of those guys. And I love it. And
He'll genuinely crack skulls. Yeah. Like, even in pass protection, when he's looking for work,
he's going to finish you.
He's going to murder a three tech.
Yep.
Right. Like, he's going to, like, physically injure that guy because of the violence that is coming his way if you leave him, you know, on a 2-on-1 type of situation.
I am genuinely excited if things hit like the upsides or whatever, a interior offensive line by next year of Banks, Jenkins, assuming they continue with him at center, and Belton at right guard, has me very excited about that interior of the offensive line in the future. Like, some legitimate movement skills, opportunities to maul some people. Like, I am legitimately excited about that interior if it gets to that point and they hit their upsides in the course of the next couple seasons. I think it'd be for really sure. fun.
When Detroit is spending on first round pick on a nose tackle that they don't need, right? I don't think they're going to let down on this whole we're building on the lines thing anytime soon. Chicago is a team that this offseason, I mean, they've damn near spent all their assets, right? Up until the draft, I guess, but they damn near spent all their assets on both sides of the line. Everyone's trying to get bigger. Everyone's trying to get tougher in the NFC North. So you can either, you know, there's an argument, right? Do you zig when they zag? Or are you like, we're going to zig. We're going to keep up with them. Right. So, I think they chose, they don't want to be the small finesse team when everyone is trying to get big. They also want to get big and keep up with the Joneses kind of.
Yep. And I think it's the right way to go. And I'm very excited for it. And I think he is going to be a people mover on that line, and sign me up for it as usual. Savion Williams in the third round. I was listening to the Athletic Football Show today, and this is the one that they had, like, Brugler and those guys were a little bit more perplexed by from a Packers standpoint of how Green Bay is going to use him. But I think this is a very unique weapon. He's a unicorn. Matt LaFleur is a very creative play caller. I just think that this was a value for what he could bring to the team that was too good for them to pass on. As Goody said, he didn't necessarily expect them to be taking two wide receivers, him to be talking about two wide receivers after day two. But here we are, and you get a very talented player that is going to probably need a little bit of work on his overall receiver skills over time, but can do some really unique stuff for you in the meantime.
Yeah, the one thing I'll say on the front end, like, Goot said that they don't have issues with his hands. They're lying. They're lying, dude. He drops a lot of footballs. More of a weapon than a true receiver at this point. I thought as a separator and as a deep speed guy, we talked about him months ago. As a separator and a deep speed guy, very talented for his size, right? It's probably him, Tet, and Higgins in this class, just from that perspective. Is everything clean? No, you gotta teach that guy how to play football. I thought it was really interesting the way they talked about him, and they're like, yeah, he hasn't spent that much time at the position. I don't know if that's true. I mean, he did run a bunch of gadget stuff. He was a wide receiver in high school until his senior year, and then he played quarterback, and he was kind of like that wildcat dual threat quarterback type of situation. He spent some time at receiver. It's not like the Iowa State cornerback, right? Where he was playing receiver his whole life and then he got moved to corner this past year. That's not what it is. I think the best comparison is still CPAT. I think he's going to be a hell of a kick returner. I think, you know, even if it's Wicks, Dobbs, Jaden Reed in the slot this year and the other receivers getting worked in, Golden at minimum is going to be a great punt returner, and Savion Williams is going to be a great kick returner this season. So, high floor from just them getting on the field year one standpoint. It's going to be interesting to see how they use them. Both LaFleur and Goot are like, you know, the coaching staff is kind of drooling over the idea of this guy. I don't get the Debo stuff. I don't think you actually want him as like a true running back, or at least in the mold of Debo. I see him more of like a CPAT, you know, high end kick returner. You want him running downhill. He's going to be able to block for you too. I think he solves some problems out there. So I wasn't sure that – I didn't think the Matthew Golden pick was we are moving away from Christian Watson. The Savion Williams pick after the Matthew Golden pick is we are not going to be paying Christian Watson unless he absolutely balls out the month of the season that he's going to be able to play this year, because his dad said, you know, he's going to be out the first 3 months with the ACL recovery.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I'm with you. I think getting both of those guys makes it less and less likely that Dobbs and Watson are back next year.
Yeah. Dobbs, I think, is a done deal. By the way, if you guys haven't figured this out yet, the DK rumors connecting the Packers to DK, the DK rumors came from Dobbs' camp because Dobbs was involved in that trade. Because Dobbs' camp went to the Packers and said, hey, we would like the Khalil Shakir deal. And the Packers were like, no, No. Not with that injury history. So
yeah,
they're trying to get him back on the West Coast, and DK clearly became available, even though everyone said DK wasn't available. Remember all the people who said DK wasn't available?
He was available.
So yeah.
Who's going to throw him the ball this year? That is still a mystery, but maybe a mystery. I think we kind of know. The whole thing at wide receiver, I agree. I think there's 0% chance. I'll do my 0.01% chance that Dobbs is back in Green Bay in 2026. The Christian one's a little bit more interesting. I almost said the opposite argument the other day of, I think if he does what you just mentioned and completely tears it up, I actually think it's more likely that he gets a big contract from somewhere else. And then Green Bay is like, we're not going to match that because we've got guys and we know your injury history. We can't trust giving you a deal like that. Whereas if he comes back for a month, plays like 100 snaps-ish, 20 snaps a game over five games or whatever, looks mostly good, but you can tell he wasn't quite himself yet. I could see maybe both sides figuring out a one-year deal that makes sense for Christian to come back that is sort of in a, I don't know, 1 year, $6 million, 1 year, $7 million, something like that, where it makes sense for both sides. Christian's familiar with an offense. He can go out, have a hopefully a great year in 26 and then get a huge contract from somebody else in 27. That feels to me like the straightest line to him finding a way back. But either way, it's the more likelihood is now, I think, that Dobbs and Watson are probably gone in 2026.
Yeah, because you're already, again, you're going to return a receiving room that at minimum has Wicks, Reed, Savion Williams, and is it Savion Williams? They kept saying Savion. I don't know if that's right. Yeah. And then Matthew Golden, right? So someone being wide receiver five in that room is going to be nuts.
The sort of sidebar to the Savion Williams selection here is, and kind of in between the second and the third, they obviously go, they take the offensive lineman in the second round with Belton. And then you have like the next, I don't know, seven picks, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 picks where everything, nothing of real significance. Then Trey Amos goes at 61 to Washington. And then you get to the third round. And prior to Green Bay taking Savion Williams, you have Darian Porter go pick 68 to the Raiders. You have Azariah Thomas go 73 to the Jets. You have Savon Revel go 76 to the Cowboys. You have Justin Whaley go 80 to the Colts. You have Jacob Parrish, who I don't think they would have been interested in anyway, but he goes 84 to Tampa. And then Noel Williams, who I think maybe would have been somebody they were interested in, go 85 to KC. And that's two picks before Savion Williams at pick 87 to Green Bay. You had a massive run on corners between really Trey Amos at the end of round two and Noel Williams, right, two picks before Green Bay at 85. And I think if they were maybe thinking when they're on the clock in round two of like, oh, there's like 7, 8 corners that we like left, but they're probably more like five or six maybe, but that they like, and hopefully we can get one in round three. That did not come to fruition, and pretty much all of them went off the board before Green Bay selected in the third round.
Yeah, and a lot of those guys were frankly reaches if you're looking at consensus draft board.
Yes.
Wise, right. And a couple of them didn't really fit the Packers. If the Packers like, say, Savon Revel, right, they brought him in on a visit. They were familiar with the medical situation. He was a top 20 talent. So if they would have been okay with that, right, they probably would have taken him in the second round.
Yes.
And he was just gone. The only one that's a surprise to me at that spot would have been Trey Amos. Trey Amos was the only cornerback that really made sense to me. Azariah Thomas was a little too slow, right? We were talking about a couple corners who were small, guys who are injured. And then you get guys like Noel Williams, who, you know, went a little higher than people expected. Even the Iowa State guy, at least to me, went higher than expected. Yep. So I think if you want to complain and say like, hey, we should have gone Amos in the second round, I'm not going to argue with you there. I think you have a valid point, but outside of that, the cliff came fast at the cornerback position, and the NFL just bulldozed through that cliff and was like, nope, we're going to keep taking corners. And it's like, all right.
Okay.
Good luck to you. I think a lot of those guys aren't going to be worth second round picks when we're talking about this in 2 years, but more power to you.
To each their own. And just another lesson learned here too, of be careful what you hear around draft season, especially when it comes to the Packers, because there were reports pretty near draft time that Green Bay was very in on Savone Revel as a first round pick, and they have the opportunity to take him in the second round. They're like, no, we're good. So just be careful what you hear about Green Bay prior to the draft.
Clearly, we're not comfortable with the medicals. I mean, it was the same thing with the Will Johnson situation, same thing with the Benjamin Morrison situation. I mean, even like Mike Green, right? It's clear why those guys fell. Like, there's no mystery here, right? All those guys were either injury or off-field guys. Isaiah Bond was ranked in the top 100. You can go grab him today.
Yep. Good luck with that.
Signed anywhere. Yeah. Like, I don't know why we have to look at all this stuff and we're like, ooh, the mystery of the NFL draft. Why is this guy falling? Clearly, they weren't cool with the medicals.
Yep.
Right? Medical, you need him to tell you that? The guy fell 20, 40 spots in the draft. No one. I don't know if there was a mock draft that had Savone Revel going in the third round. Right?
Are you surprised at all that we actually, I don't even care about this. Never mind. I'm not bringing it up. We're going to go in a different direction. Edge rushers obviously are the next two for Green Bay. Sorrell in the fourth and then Colin Oliver in the fifth. Could not be different types of edge rushers. Obviously, like we talked about before, Oliver has some potential to be an off-ball linebacker. I think they're going to use him as a situational edge with special teams value. But two very different players, two very unique players, two very good football players. I like both of them a lot when I was watching them. Maybe.
No one,
maybe not.
No one told me to watch Sorrell. I made the mistake of, Andy, there were 18 edge rushers who are ranked in the top 100 prospects on the consensus board. Okay. I spent damn near a month watching all those guys. The next two guys were Jared Ivey out of Ole Miss, who went undrafted because he ran a terrible time, right?
Okay.
And David Walker from Central Arkansas. So when I saw Jared Ivey and David Walker as the next two names on the list, I was like, I think I'm just going to move to a different position. Sorrell was right after that. There's probably a lot of NFL coaches right now who are going back through this draft class and seeing where guys went and are like, why didn't the area scout put this on my radar? Because these coaches have limited time too.
Yep. Right?
I know everyone is like, you know, if you're talented, the NFL will find you and all that stuff. Marquez Valdes-Scantling is an example of this, where Southeast area scouts got lambasted the year that he was drafted. Because a lot of receivers coaches were like, what do you mean this guy is giant and can run a 4.3 and he wasn't worth putting on my watch list? Because these guys are going through free agency, the combine. I mean, hell, the Packers started virtual meetings last week, right? Before the draft even starts. These guys don't have a lot. It's not an off season. The off season for NFL coaches, it's going to be after OTAs are done and rookie minicamp and stuff like that. And then the start of actual camp, that like month-ish that they actually have off. That's their off season. They're still putting.
I know that off season very well.
Yes. But I think people who are fans just think of like, okay, the season is over.
No,
you're just thinking about the draft until training camp starts. Right. I mean, you just have time off. That's not how it works. I think that because of the volume of edge rushers in this class, especially at the top end of this class, a guy like Sorrell fell. This guy is a clear top 100 selection, and I didn't get to him, right? And I told you, I watched edge rushers for a month. I didn't get to him. This guy's usually a second-round pick. That's amazing value to get at, what was it, like 127 or something like that, that they got him?
It was. I can tell you right now. It was 124.
Yeah. Andy, I went through Mock Draftable, which is a website that my buddy runs. It was kind of like RAS before RAS, right?
I love still using Mock Draftable, anymore.
Yeah.
It's great. The spider chart.
Mm-hmm. The spider charts. Since 1999, here are all of the edge rushers who match Sorrell's height, weight, speed, I'm counting that as 40 time, and bend his three cone. Trayvon Walker, good. Lucas Van Ness, we could talk about
we'll that see.
Situation
there. TBD.
Montez Sweat.
Good.
Jason Owe.
Good.
All those, all but Lucas Van Ness have had double-digit sacks, right? All of those guys have been drafted in the first round. The next two guys are mid-round picks. Andy, who are examples of good mid-round pick edge rushers? They don't come around very often.
No, there's not a ton.
You talk about edge rushers or quarterbacks, right? If there's a good one, that's how many the NFL is going to take in the first round. Give me two mid-round edge rushers who have panned out.
Oh, boy. When was Bryce Huff selected?
I think he was a UDFA. That's a funny one, though.
Okay. Kabir Bajabiamila was a one. Aaron Kampman was one that was a.
I'll give you the last two names on this list.
Okay.
Danielle Hunter and Trey Hendrickson.
Whew. Okay.
So the group of guys, again, height, weight, speed, bend of the caliber of Sorrell. Trayvon Walker, Lucas Van Ness, Montez Sweat, Jason Owe, Danielle Hunter, Trey Hendrickson. Only six guys. Four of them have gone in the first round. All but Van Ness have posted double-digit sacks in the NFL. This guy should not have been there.
It's going to be great that when we look back at that list of six players 10 years from now, that the only two that didn't work out were the ones that were drafted by the Green Bay. I'm just kidding. No, but that's exciting.
History says, man, like,
yep.
Again, we talk about it with the combine, right? When we do like combine preview stuff and people ask me and they're like, edge rushers, what matters? If you can run in the ballpark of a 4.6, 4.7, and you have a 7 second three cone, that's what we're looking for. Checks the box. You watch his film. I went through his entire season last night, Andy. This is one reason why I've only watched the top two day three picks in this draft. I went through his whole year.
Yep.
I think during the Arkansas game is really where things started to make sense for him, where that week. I don't know if it was that game or that week, but he made a couple plays early on in the Arkansas game. I know you liked one of these tweets at like 2 o'clock in the morning, my time, which is just insane your time, where he's getting triple teamed. He's getting the tackle. He's getting the tight end and he's getting the running back by the fourth quarter of that Arkansas game. From that point on, he's making three drive killing plays at least minimum per game that just derails offenses. My question for him, he's reportedly very strong. He's a guy with a 425-pound bench press. He does not play like that consistently. There are a lot of times he has a violent stack and shed where you're like, yes, this is first-round pick, right? This is a first-round pick. And then there's a lot of times where he's supposed to be holding the edge and he's getting kicked out and he's not doing much. I think he could do a little bit more of activity as far as hands go. I need him to play a little bit stronger on the edge. I know it's goofy to say because he's got a 425-pound bench press. I'm not getting close to that, Andy. This guy should have at least been a second-round pick. And he has no physical limitations.
No. One of the things that Brugler pointed out, they asked like all the draftable players from Texas, like all of them, if you could bring one player with you to your team that was from Texas, who would you bring with you? And he said, literally every one of them said Baron Sorrell. He's like, every single one of them to a T is like, no, I'd bring Baron with me. And like, and that has nothing to do with on field. That's just more of like that. That's the type of character player that you get from him too. He's literally, we talk all the time, Justice, about like checking all the boxes, but like productive SEC school, the height, weight, speed, athletic profile, high-end character. Everyone loves the kid. Yeah, you start running out of reasons as to why 123 players went before him.
And that's why I kind of painted the picture of sometimes edge rusher, you know, sometimes positional coaches get busy, right?
Yep.
And they don't have all the people that they need to watch in front of them because that's the only thing that makes sense to me. The only alternative narrative I can paint, because he's been a healthy guy too, right? He played 30 straight NFL or 30 straight college football games, you know, last season in the SEC, is the whole no red flags is a red flag thing. This was a kid who's very smart. He was originally committed to Northwestern. When you look at, so he's a Texas native, so it makes sense that he went to the University of Texas. But if you look at the schools that he was down to from like a recruiting perspective, it's, you know, it's Northwestern. It's Virginia, it's Vanderbilt, it's Texas. So he was clearly looking at high academic institutions and stuff like that. And sometimes NFL coaches kind of, I mean, You guys watched that damn interview, right? I didn't catch until last night when I was watching this kid. I didn't start tearing up, but you know, you get the emotions of the yeah. Like it was about to happen. Like,
yep. I actually got to that point. I'm like, I don't think I can watch anymore. I'm like, I think I'm good. Like, I'm like, I got like halfway through it. And I'm like, I get the gist of it. Everyone's as emotional. I'm like, I'm good. I'm ready to go in a different direction now and start watching film again. Cause I'm like, yeah, this is very emotional.
So that kid clearly cares about football. Yes. Right. But sometimes these kids who are very smart get hit with the fair or unfair, get hit with the questions about, does this guy care about football when he's a bright dude who could obviously do something else in his life. Right. Yeah. That's the only alternative narrative I have for why he is available. He should not have been there. This is, you know, we it's funny because we give, you know, letter grades to draft picks and stuff. Everyone wants instant reaction. Like, this is, to me, A++++++ draft pick. This guy should not have been there. This guy should not have been there.
One of my hot takes as I started going through pre-draft and watching through these like top 100 players and whatnot was everyone was talking about the defensive tackle class, and it clearly was a very, very talented defensive tackle class. And my biggest takeaway over and over is like, why are people not talking even more about this defensive end class? There are so many unbelievably talented defensive ends in this class where you get Landon Jackson in the third round, Braden Swinson goes in the fifth round, Birch goes later. Like, I'm like, you're seeing guys, Tuamalu, I mean, Sawyer goes later. Like, you're seeing guys that I think in other drafts would have been first or second round picks go so much later in this draft. It was one of the things that I was really stunned by as I was watching through it. And that was one of the real interesting things. And I think Green Bay was the benefactor of that by getting Sorrell here in the fourth round.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about the corner market, right? We talked about the defensive tackle market where the NFL was just like, you know, to hell with wherever the consensus has them. Like, we're just going to push through. We're going to just keep taking these guys. And I don't care if they're banged up or hurt or they have off-field questions or any of this stuff. Like, we're just going to keep taking these dudes. So, yeah, edge rushers end up falling. And, again, I watched 18 of these guys, man. I spent a month watching edge rushers. I did not get to this dude. I can see why I could see a world where coaches are in a similar position today.
Where would you put him on that list of 18? Just that you don't have to give me an exact number, but you know, you kind of in general, where would you kind of place him in that realm?
Three off the top, right? Carter, Green, and Stewart for me. They would have gone before Michael. I would have, because he's so young and he was played so badly at Georgia, but like, I like him better than JT, right? I like him. I mean, I guess he would have been close to like Ezeraku for me. I had Jackson higher than he ended up going, so I would have had him close. Birch, I mean, those are really the only guys. Swinson, who obviously fell because of some like effort mentality question marks. Okay. But like that tier of like Ezeraku, Landon Jackson, Jordan Birch, Swinson, if you know the off field was clean, right? I think he's in like that kind of conversation for me.
Yeah. No, he's a very fun player. And then obviously they get a Colin Oliver, who is a completely different style of edge rusher. One that I know for me personally, I'm like, can you just get somebody that's more of a designated pass rush guy? And he's like, no, we have our types, They got, theoretically here, their designated pass rush guy.
We haven't seen a guy like this since Clay Matthews. Now, I'm not saying he's Clay Matthews. And people need to, because he's going to beat the piss out of some guys in preseason, right? He's going to get up against some backup tackle. And people are like, start him 17 games. He's not going to be able to play rundowns. He's just not.
Not at all.
But like his quickness, his redirectability, his bend, like high tier. The only question is how many snaps you're going to be able to play this guy, and possibly the injury question, right? He had a foot. He only got to play a game and a half this past season for Oklahoma State. But if you're talking about just like guys who can match burst off the line, quickness, bend, to me, there's only two guys in this draft class who can do it better than him. And that would have been Abdul Carter and Mike Green. I don't think that he's going to be a guy who's going to be able to play more than 10 snaps a game for you because of how small he is, at least as a true edge rusher. I know, you know, they floated all the stuff about him at linebacker. Those 10 snaps are going to matter a lot. We got to have some sort of signal to Packers fans. Like, you see Colin Oliver on the field, please be loud as hell. I need him. I need silent count. I need silent count on the field immediately. Cause if it's just, he gets to go and he gets to go when the, you know, the center's doing the little head bob thing, making sure the quarterback's actually back there, dog, he gets shot out of a rocket. Those 10 snaps that he's going to play are going to matter a lot, a lot. I'm actually kind of surprised that the Packers went this direction at edge rusher. Cause if you look at the visitors that brought in, right, Jordan Birch, Elijah Roberts, it's almost like they were trying to go for like guys who could kick inside and be pressure specialists in that way. And instead they get a guy who's just teeny tiny, shot out of a cannon. Like, just the things that he can do are bonkers from out there. And I don't know what his medical situation is like. I think that's a guy you usually take round three, in my opinion. So another, these are the two best values, I think, in this class for the Packers. I think he's a guy that you take usually around round three. So I don't know if the foot was in play. I haven't asked around. Spoiler alert, my guys who are in the league are busy. They just got guys that are just about to do all these practices and stuff. But if the foot was in play and he dropped a little bit because of that, I wouldn't be surprised because he's that level of talented, even though he is a DPR. He is a designated pass rusher.
Yeah. He, when I threw him on immediately, I'm like, oh yeah, it's just such a fun player. Somebody you reminded me of a little bit was another player that was thought to maybe be a edge rusher / linebacker hybrid. Herbig from the Badgers, who went to the Steelers, who comes in, just does some pass rush stuff, did stay at edge rusher. His like PFF stuff has been through the roof. And like, you see him and like, there are times where he gets bodied and it's game over. Like he doesn't have anything, but if around you fast, it's just, he wins and he's going to get you a handful of just really quick sacks throughout the course of the season. He's been really fun for Pittsburgh as like a change of pace guy. And I think Green Bay has got something a little bit similar here. You turn on the tape, he's immediately just a fun player to watch. And you just start thinking of like the unique ways that I'm sure Jeff Hafley would love to use him.
He's a guy who's so fast that he can beat quick game. Packers don't have that. And we haven't had that since Clay.
It was interesting. Like Hendrickson talking about him was like just saying how the game has changed and how, you know, people getting rid of the ball so quick. And like, it was just interesting that the juxtaposition from what Goody's talked about in the past of like, you know, we don't want guys that can't do everything and, you know, that sort of stuff. We want guys that can still hold up against the run and we don't want kind of specialists. And then, you know, less than like 10 months later, they draft a specialist in the fifth round. And I love it. I'm so pumped about it.
Well, it helps. I mean, he's going to be able to play teams, right? That's one more benefit because he's got a linebacker body. I don't think you want to count him. I think you almost have to steal a roster spot, right? I guess is the way you think about it. Because I think you're going to have at least, you know, five linebackers outside of him to get through, because I don't think you're not going to want to play him actually at linebacker, like not an every down guy. You could have him be the backup to Isaiah McDuffie. I think that makes sense. If he's a backup Sam, I think you can do that. And then at the end, you're going to want four guys ahead of him too, just to get you through a game so that if you have two injuries, you don't need this guy to be playing rundowns. And I think the Packers have hit defensive end enough that they've earned the right to be able to grab a guy like this, right? And not have to put him in the starting lineup. And no matter what, even with injuries and stuff like that, you only have to play him 10 snaps per game, right? Because that's his ideal role. Because otherwise, he is going to gut you. Teams are going to run right at him if you give him a chance. So you got to be smart about how you play him. And again, I'm telling Packers fans right now, dog, he might finish the preseason with like 7 sacks. Like he's going to beat the piss out of some of these offensive tackles off of the line. Just know they're not going to make the kid a starter. Keep that in mind. Like, we drafted him for a specific role, and he's going to have to play that role. And everyone's not cool with playing that role. We talked about who's the guy with the Bryce Huff. We already mentioned him.
Yeah, yeah.
He played that role for the Jets. The Eagles signed him to play a bigger role. He can't get on the field. They hate it. Fangio does not want him active on game days because he doesn't want to work around that stuff, right? Everyone is not down with the program. The Packers seem down with this program. I'm excited to see him rush the 10 snaps a game and get 4 pressures off of those 10 snaps.
Did you see I posted this? Do you know how many times he got to rush the passer this past year?
Not much, because he went halfway down through the Arkansas game, right?
He got 46 pass rush snaps this past year, is all he was able to get. 15 pressures on 46 pass rush snaps, a 34.8% win rate, a 32.6% pressure rate, a 90.8 PFF pass rush grade on his 48 attempts of rushing the passer. Like, it's just, it's unreal. Obviously, that was a very small sample size, yada, yada, yada. But yes, it was very fun to watch those 46 snaps, to say the least.
Elite role player. Still, yes, a role player. Again, and Packers fans, calm down, because you guys are going to see him and you guys are going to be like, you know, this is Von Miller. He's not Von Miller.
No, here's the thing, though. Like, can you get him to 20 snaps a game by getting 10 on special teams and 10 on defense, though?
Yeah, like, I thought you meant 20 on defense, and I was like, no, you're not going to be able to. But yeah, you're going to be able to play him on teams. Going to be able to play him on teams. He's athletic and he's 240 pounds. Why can't you play him on teams? He's got experience at linebacker. I think he translates to teams better than he does true linebacker.
If you told me he was one of these bizarro guys, like who is the Viking that did punt coverage, was
Everson Griffin?
Everson Griffin, yeah.
It was a punt gunner
as a punt gunner, like 250 or whatever. If you told me it was like this bizarro guy, maybe that's where the corner RAS score comes in. If you told me it was like this bizarro punt gunner at his size and speed, like, I wouldn't completely put it by him. Like, that's the kind of crazy guy he is. But no, he's a really fun player. I'm excited about him. As we wrap up here, Justice, I know we got to get out of here, but Warren Brinson, Micah Robinson, John Williams, I know you didn't have a chance to watch the tape in totality yet, but just kind of overarching thoughts on how they wrapped up the draft.
Yeah, one's a pilot, right? And one's a aerospace engineer major. So what do the Packers know, dude? Are we going to the moon? Are we claiming it? We getting the
G-Force
flag on the moon?
Yeah, it's you know how all the like teams are now getting international areas that they like get to claim.
Yeah.
Green Bay's claiming space is what they're claiming.
Let's go. Seen a little bit of Brinson in passing. I know a lot of people are questioning whether he's actually a nose tackle. He can play nose tackle at the next level. How good of a nose tackle he's going to be, I need to watch more tape. But just because he was lining up at three, like Michael Williams was lining up at three tech for Georgia. I don't care where the hell these guys end up playing their guys. I don't think that's what that means moving forward. I do think that him and Asir Stackhouse coming in together is a little interesting. Think of that as the Dark Knight pool stick scene, right? You just break in half, those two fight against each other. One of them is going to end up being the Packers nose tackle too, because they need one of them to be their nose tackle too.
Yep.
So that's kind of my thoughts there. Corner, glad we hit it. Glad we're adding more competition there. Was hoping that three guys between the two practice squad dudes from last year who were draft picks and this Tulane kid would be fighting out for one spot on the 53-man roster. Now it seems like if they really are going to move on from Jair, those three are going to be fighting for two spots. I like that a little less. Don't dislike the player because I haven't seen him. Don't dislike the position being hit. And then, John Williams, I mean, just more competition on the offensive line. That's going to be another bloodbath of a position. We already talked about it. They have 17 guys under contract on the offensive line right now. It's going to be tough for all those guys to even get snaps in the in practices. So I wonder what we see there. Wouldn't be surprised if they drop down a couple of offensive linemen, you know, maybe like a cornerback. Or defensive line, honestly. Defensive lines, particularly the edge rushers. Wouldn't be surprised if they cut some offensive linemen, defensive ends this week and add some more competition at linebacker with the Canadian dude, quarterback with the Canadian dude, and then, you know, maybe some receivers. They always like to have a ton of receivers just to have people to throw to. especially if you're going to work out four quarterbacks, yep, right, instead of three. So I'd kind of assume that that's the range that we're going to get for what the Packers roster looks like after rookie minicamp. I think the only two notable UDFAs from a making the roster standpoint are Dumas Johnson, because we talked about, you know, the linebacker position stuff already, and then Nasir Stackhouse, because I think he's going to be battling with Brinson. Again, just kind of a little interested in the 225-pound cornerback. Oh, what the hell is that, man? What the?
I'm going to throw on that tape just for fun.
Goot, you're a sicko, dude. Where do you even find this guy, dude? You're nasty, boy, Goot. Brian, you're nasty, dude. Where'd you find this guy?
I'm going to be interested to see if there's any position change. When I get to minicamp, the first thing I'm going to be looking at is when the roster, they give us the roster of what position he's listed at, and just see if there's any unique things like that. Micah Robinson, by the way, 5'10", 183, 4'3", 840. Sam Shields, 5'10", 184, 4'3", 40. Let's go. Undrafted guy. Now, Sam Shields had a 7'4'3 short shuttle. Micah Robinson had a 0.79 for percentile. So, sorry, a 4.19 short shuttle for Sam Shields, a 4.55 for Micah Robinson. Just about the worst short shuttle you could possibly have. So, no, not exactly the same. But if
perspective, like Packers, when they look at offensive line stuff, they're looking at like the 4.75 range.
Yes. So. Yeah, it's not much better. If they could ever find a corner, though, like they did with Sam Shields as an undrafted guy that could somehow come in and play really well right away, this would be a great year to have.
I'd like to cash in the briefcase if that's possible. Yeah.
Me as well. All right, final thoughts, Justice, state of the roster, anything Green Bay needs to do next, any direction you want to go?
No, man, thumbs up on this draft. The guys that I've seen, I really like them. I'm going to dive into the other guys later in the week for when you guys are watching this stuff. I like the process. Pay attention to visits next year. I don't know. Like, people hit me up and they're like, you wrote like 15 reports and five of them were draft picks. How'd you do that? What do you know? And I'm like, just pay attention to visits. Savion Williams, I got up because the Packers have like a specific type at receiver, right?
Yep.
They're telling you. Pay attention. Pay attention, yeah, man.
No, they have types. They have players that they like to bring in for visits. And maybe some of them are subterfuge. Maybe Walter Nolan the entire time was somebody they had no interest in drafting.
That's the only question I have from their visits this year is just, why'd you bring in the three techs?
Yeah.
If you wanted to pay Devontae Wyatt, I don't get it.
Maybe it was just fake. Maybe they did want to, you know, throw off the scent of some stuff.
But then, dude, why do you say that the week of the draft that you're basically out of the D tackle market?
That's true. I don't know. They're a unique breed, these NFL general managers. You never quite know. Although, like we just said, Goody sometimes wears it on his sleeve, and you can tell sometimes exactly what he's going to do. All right, Justice, where can we find all of your incredible work?
AcmePackingCompany.com. I have written at least 50 pieces since the start of the draft day, or since the start of day one of the draft. Getting into these guys now, I'm sure that, you know, we can touch on the later round draft picks that I haven't seen yet next week. Yep. But if you want, you know, an early look, I'll probably get post up on them whenever I watch them at APC. Keep your eye on the rookie minicamp stuff. I'm sure they're going to bring in some weird guys. Like I said, there's already two notable dudes, right, between the Canadian quarterback and then the potential number one CFL pick. So whenever that stuff comes out, I'll deep dive into some of these guys and see if they're any interesting or if they're just, you know, sort of bodies. Because what the hell else am I going to write about? Andy, it's April 27th, so.
Well, you get to do potentially, if it happens, you get to, you know, break down Isaiah Simmons if he comes to Green Bay.
Jair is cut, I mean, the contracts, they're going to have to make the decisions about these contracts with Devontae Wyatt and Quay Walker soon. So
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'm assuming rookie minicamp is going to be this weekend. It's usually the Friday, Saturday after the draft.
They said this weekend.
Oh, they did say it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I was asking around and I couldn't get confirmation on anything. So awesome. So I will be there. I'll for sure be there on Friday. I'm almost positive I'll be there on Saturday, but I'll tweet out as much unique, random, fun stuff as I can possibly find, so you have something to write about this week. Justice, I cannot thank you enough. I mentioned Luigi's earlier. I also want to shout out Habish, and Rotier. They've done an unbelievable job of partnering with us all throughout the draft season. And of course, serious injuries need serious representation. And that's exactly what you get with Habish, and Rotier. They've recovered millions for clients across the state of Wisconsin because to them, getting you the compensation you deserve is not just a game, it's a commitment. When you call Habish, you're going to talk to a lawyer directly. Their number is 800-242-2874 or 800-2-HABISH, or you can find them online at habish.com. Habish, Rotier, national reputation, hometown service. Visit habish.com for more information or call 1-800-2-HABISH. Make sure you're supporting those two wonderful sponsors of ours, both habish.com and, of course, Luigi's Frozen Pizza. Justice, I can't again thank you enough for all of your work over drafts weekend. Again, go find him at acmepackingcompany.com on social media at JUMOSQ. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL in the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.